Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
How is a Christian to understand 1 Corinthians 15:29? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. And with me to discuss this is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We have been looking at the doctrine of baptism for the dead, or vicarious baptism, baptism by proxy, that is often practiced in the Mormon church. In fact, it's the most often practiced ritual in a Mormon temple. And we're trying to get a little bit of the background history and how it has been done and who it's been done for in the Mormon context. But what is the main verse that we often hear from Latter-day Saints when it comes to support of this teaching? And it happens to be 1 Corinthians 15:29.
It says, "Else what shall they do which are baptized for the dead, if the dead rise not at all? Why are they then baptized for the dead?" Now, Bill, that verse is used over and over again, and it sounds like a slam dunk for the Mormon. It sounds like, well, it's in the Bible, therefore it must be true.
And that is a conclusion that many Latter-day Saints will make. However, when we were taking hermeneutics, okay, what is the one rule that was emphasized over and over again? You do not build a doctrine on one verse.
And we also learned context. It's just like location. And you cannot take a verse and pull it out of its context because you're going to kill it.
Yep. This is the only time the phrase baptism for the dead is ever used in the Bible. The only time. And the Mormons have taken this verse and they have spent literally hundreds of millions of dollars around this verse, building their huge temples and doing hours and hours of genealogical work in order to find out who their dead ancestors are, in order for them to be able to go to a Mormon temple and be baptized on behalf of their deceased, in the hope that that deceased person will embrace Mormonism in the spirit world. What does the verse say? "Else what shall they do which are baptized for the dead, if the dead rise not at all? Why are they then baptized for the dead?"
Ninth President David O. McKay wrote, "Not a few commentators have tried to explain away this passage's true significance, but its context proves plainly that in the days of the apostles there existed the practice of baptism for the dead. That is, living persons were immersed in water for and in behalf of those who were dead, not those who were dead to sin, but who had passed to the other side."
Now, he makes an assumption here that I don't think McKay could ever support. He makes an assumption based on the presupposition that it must be a teaching from God, because why? Joseph Smith said so. Mm-hmm. When he says that there existed the practice of baptism for the dead in the days of the apostles, he's partially correct on that. I mean, there's no doubt this must have been going on to some extent. But it doesn't necessarily prove that it was considered orthodox. I mean, we know that somebody must have been doing this because Paul says so. "Else what shall they do which are baptized for the dead?" And we're going to look at that word "they" much more closely in this broadcast. But he says that there existed this and that these living persons were immersed in water for and in behalf of those who were dead. I would like to know what proof he has for that because, again, the vagueness of this passage. We don't know what Paul is really referring to in this passage.
Well, many of these LDS commentators are using arguments from silence. They build a case for something that really does not say. Paul makes a passing reference to, and they've turned, as you say, Bill, this into a major doctrine. BYU professor Robert Millett said, "Many non-Latter-day Saint scholars believe that in 1 Corinthians, Paul was denouncing or condemning the practice of baptism for the dead as heretical. This is a strange conclusion, since Paul uses the practice to support the doctrine of the resurrection. In essence, he says, Why are we performing baptism in behalf of our dead? If, as some propose, there will be no resurrection of the dead. If there is to be no resurrection, would not such baptisms be a waste of time? I'm just flattered, or not flattered, I am flabbergasted that he says something that's not even talked about in the text at all and makes up a whole doctrine.
And notice what he did. He took the word they
And turned it into we. Absolutely.
Sorry, Mr. Millett. Yeah. That's not what the passage says. That is not what the apostles said. And so they are doing exactly what you said, Eric. They're basically taking an argument from silence and building a huge doctrine on it. Now, let me go back. First of all, he says that Dr. Millett says that they denounce or condemn the practice. Most of the commentaries that I've read, they're pretty neutral on this. They don't know exactly what Paul was saying, and Paul is rather neutral, and he's merely trying to make a point to people who tend to doubt there is a resurrection. So the question is why are you doing something that looks towards a resurrection if that's not what you really believe? Paul is merely bringing out an inconsistency here. We don't really see Paul condemning or supporting it.
Right.
As Millett would say, he says that Paul uses the practice to support the doctrine. No, he doesn't.
Make this clear. It is a passing reference. It's used in the argument for the resurrection of the body, and it was thrown out, and then he continued on. It was not meant to ever be a doctrine.
So what does a Christian do with this? If you're talking to a Latter-day Saint about this, what kind of a response can you give? I think D.A. Carson gives one of the best explanations of this. He's a Christian theologian, and he's written on this subject more than once. But let me just read you what D.A. Carson says about this. He says, the most plausible interpretation is that some in Corinth were getting baptized vicariously for the dead. Several factors, however, put this into perspective. Although Paul does not explicitly condemn the practice, neither does he endorse it. Several writers have offered the following analogy. Imagine a Protestant writing, quote, why do they then pray for the dead if the dead do not rise at all, end quote. No one would take this as an endorsement of the practice of praying for the dead. It is a criticism of the inconsistency of praying for the dead while holding that the dead do not rise. To make this rhetorical question an endorsement of the practice of praying for the dead, one would expect this question, he says, why do we then pray for the dead? Likewise, as Carson goes on, says, in 1 Corinthians 15:29, Paul preserves the more distant they. After all, his primary concern in 1 Corinthians 15 is the defense of the Christian doctrine of resurrection. His rhetorical question in verse 29 may simply be pointing out the inconsistency of those who deny the final resurrection, granted their rather strange baptismal practices. And they were strange. There is no good evidence for vicarious baptism anywhere in the New Testament or among the earliest apostolic fathers. By the same token, there is no hint that this vicarious baptism, if that is what it was intended by the Corinthian believer to cover as many deceased people as could be named. If the practice existed at all, it may have been tied to a few people or special cases, for example, when a relative died after trusting the gospel but before being baptized. We really do not know. If it were something like that, one could understand why Paul does not make a federal case of it. In any case, Paul's clear emphasis is that people were justified by grace through faith, which demands a personal response. Christian baptism is part of that personal response, even as it is a covenantal pledge. In contrast, baptism on behalf of someone who has not exercised such faith sounds like magic of something far from Pauline thought.
It was a long quote, but that's a great one.
It was worth it. And yes. I know reading long quotes on the radio can be kind of tedious, but it needs to be said.
But over and over again, he's pointing out, we really do not know. We're not saying as what Millett just said, that, well, you know, you're arguing one way or the other. There's just not a whole lot of consensus here as to what is meant, and it's puzzled New Testament commentators for, if not centuries, at least many decades.
We're admitting it's a difficult passage, but Carson goes on. Why don't you read what he says very quickly in the time remaining?
Yeah, he says the reason is not that God must say things more than once for them to be true or binding. The reason, rather, is that if something is said only once, it is easily misunderstood or misapplied. When something is repeated on several occasions and in slightly different contexts, readers will enjoy a better grasp of what is meant and what is at stake. That is why the famous baptism for the dead passage, 1 Corinthians 15:29, is not unpacked at length and made a major plank in, say, the Heidelberg Catechism or the Westminster Confession. Over 40 interpretations of that passage, 40 interpretations of that passage.
And I've heard that's a very conservative estimate on
that. Well, he says over, so you know, it could be 50, right. 60, 70. But over 40 interpretations of that passage have been offered in the history of the church. Mormons are quite sure what it means, of course, but the reason why they are sure is because they are reading it in the context of other books that they claim are inspired and authoritative. He's referring to the standard works and the writings of Joseph Smith and the prophets and apostles who have talked about this issue.
In other words, Joseph Smith introduces a conclusion, and the Mormons start gathering up all the verses to try and support that conclusion, which is not a very good way of interpreting the Bible. But this is often what Latter-day Saints have done. It all goes down to, well, what did Joseph Smith say on this subject? Again, the historical context needs to be looked at also. As was stated by Carson, baptism for the dead was not a regular practice of the Christian church. What did Jeffrey Bromley say? Go ahead.
Well, and he said that apart from a possible reference in Tertullian, there is evidence of such a practice only among heretical groups like the Cerinthians and the Marcionites, neither group which existed when 1 Corinthians was written.
Okay, so we've got to go, to people who had some questionable teachings on this. Tertullian had some good ideas, but he also had some kind of funny ideas, too. This would be one of those. But then again, what did they turn to? Cerinthians and Marcionites, heretical groups
that were not around in 1 Corinthians.
And they weren't even there. That's true. So what we don't see a real good pedigree for the Latter-day Saints in order to draw the conclusion that they have regarding 1 Corinthians 15:29. We would say that it's not a very good pass. Just because it mentions something does not mean that that was an orthodox practice in the early church. Christians, we need to understand this, and hopefully Latter-day Saints, we hope that you will understand as well and why we struggle with your conclusion.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. When trying to understand the doctrines of our Latter-day Saint friends, family members, and co-workers, it can be very difficult to know what to believe. In his resource titled, In Their Own Words, A Collection of Mormon Quotations, Mormonism Research Ministry's Bill McKeever compiles some of the very best Mormon quotations that will help you better understand what LDS leaders and scholars have said on such issues as atonement, exaltation, and preexistence. Written in an encyclopedic format, In Their Own Words provides quotes on literally dozens of issues, alphabetically listed for quick reference that can be found in a matter of seconds. No more wondering what Mormonism's leaders have said on any topic, and this resource is available in both book format as well as on CD disc. Just load the PDF file onto your computer and you're ready to do valuable research. These are the very best quotes that Mormonism Research Ministry uses on a regular basis. In Their Own Words is available now at mrm.org. Again, mrm.org. Get it today.